order officially, and at that point we'll approve the minutes. But I want to get started, there's a storm coming in and some people need to be on the road, and so I would like to have, first of all, the Energy Policy and Finance Division kind of come to us, if you would please. We appreciate you coming before us, Representative Westrom and Representative Hilty. We have two of the other groups that have come before us that the shorter the presentation, the more likely they'll get a bigger target.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any questions?
Well, I bet you Steve has got a dozen for you. Okay, you can welcome to the committee, and the time is yours.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I noted when Representative Kahn gave her presentation at the last meeting, she represented that the State Government Finance Division has the lowest portion of the budget. It's sort of like the way each of us rural members wants to point out that we have the poorest county in the state. Our budget division does have the lowest percentage of the state budget. It's 0.1%, which consists basically of two accounts, the Commerce Department and the Public Utilities Commission. We do have within the Commerce Department budget some significant change items, and the governor's next generation energy initiative. One is the E85 Everywhere initiative, which would appropriate $12 million from the general fund to provide grants for the expansion of E85 pumps to service stations across the state. It would expand the current number of 300 to hopefully 1,500. I think that we all think that that's an important initiative. However, I think there are some questions that remain about that that will need to be resolved as we consider that budget item, because I think there's some question about how rapidly it's possible to deploy those stations and how we mesh the supply and demand question here. The governor has represented it as a chicken and egg question. If you have if you don't have stations, you don't have the possibility of having E85 vehicles to use them, and if you don't have E85 vehicles, there's no demand for the stations, and that's something that we're going to be working out. In addition, there's a couple other major initiatives, a $10 million initiative for competitive grants dealing with energy related research and pilot projects. Likewise, there may be some things that we need to sort out about that. I think everyone will be in support of that, but that funding is not from the general fund. That is funding that would come from allocations from the Renewable Development Fund, which is part of the Prairie Island Agreement with Xcel Energy. And there might be some question there that we have to resolve about whether those proposals actually cash flow. But again, I think it's something that we would certainly be in support of. There are some change items also in the budget regarding the Department of Commerce, adding some staff to deal with a couple of growing problems that we have. one with mortgage fraud. We want to add some additional staff to deal with that growing problem, and also with the problem more generally of the the senior population being preyed upon by various scam artists. And again, that was something that is a growing problem that Commerce will stay on top of, and I think that that's something that certainly needs to be done, that we would be in support of. So generally, I would say that we're pretty much in line with the governor's budget, although we would certainly think that it would be more appropriate to have a 0.2% of the overall budget, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to interrupt a second and officially call the meeting to order. And I better do this before my CLA gets mad at me again. We have a couple of minutes that need to be approved. And Representative Swiggum, would you be so kind as to move the minutes of February 14th?
I sure would, Mr. Chair.
And any other discussion? And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And carried. And Representative Murphy, Mary, would you be so kind as to move February 20th?
I will, Mr. Chair.
And
adoption minutes is printed.
And discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. Okay, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair,
one other announcement. Cookies over here. I have a note for the cookies by Jerry's. What it says is cookies. And I think she's added by Jerry. They're actually from Christine. So help yourself or pass them around.
I added by Jerry.
Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have a whole lot more to add beyond what Representative Hilty talked about. I think, in general, the governor has laid out some good steps to advance energy opportunities in our state, deal with some issues that Commerce has pinpointed, and we don't have a lot more to add beyond what Representative Hilty said from the minority perspective, and I think that it's generally a pretty good budget.
Okay, questions? Any questions at all? From you're probably going to get that 2% after being so short. But we appreciate very much you sharing your thoughts and concerns with us, and as we try to make these decisions.
Well, Mr. Chair, I should add that the risk of jeopardizing our 0.2%, that we do have a number of bills that are pending in the committee that are basically proposals for research or for pilot projects that I think many of which are have a lot of merit, and we're hoping that we can find some additional funding or at least be able to get some of those projects going, because this is an area generally that I think really is very much deserving of attention at this time. We participated earlier today in the signing of the Renewable Energy Standard bill over on the university campus, and I think that is the first of many steps that need to be taken to deal with what I think is a global energy crisis. And as much as we can do in this legislature to support research and the development of alternative and sustainable energy practices, I think we should do. I hope we'll be able to do maybe a little bit more than is proposed currently.
Okay. Representative, any other questions? Again, thank you very much for coming down, and drive safely on the way home.
I will, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you.
Tori, I've got a deer hunting license for you, too. In the metropolitan area, by the way. Okay, Representative Rucavina. And I guess you have two people with you. Do you want to do them separately? I know Tom is not feeling well, so we'll get him up and then...
Mr. Chair, I have two leads, Representative Ornis and Gunther, so...
They want to stay away from, we're far away from
that. You guys want to stay away from it. It's about 2 o'clock. I started feeling like I was getting a flu or something. That's okay.
Representative Rucavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The governor's proposals on the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Division include about $138 million of ongoing money at the Office of Higher Education, the biggest number being the Achieve 2 proposal, also $30 million for the GI, Minnesota GI Bill, $12 million in grants, some other smaller programs. At the MINSCU system, there was $177 million in requests by MINSCU, and if you look at the actual ongoing out in the next biennium, it's only $72 million. They did not get any type of compensation adjustment at all in their system, as opposed to others. At the University of Minnesota, which had a $184 million request, the governor has about $122 million of ongoing money. You know, this makes me nervous, members. Excuse me.
I said, you're not
going to
throw up.
No. I should throw up over this proposal, but I won't. out of the, you know, President Brunick had indicated that, you know, if they don't get there close to what they asked for, they're probably going to go up higher than the 4.5% they had built in tuition increases. I forgot to mention that MINSCU also had 4.4% increase for tuition built into their budget. There's the also the one-time money for Mayo in this proposal at the university. In the DEED, at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, we have about $20 million of new money, but it's $9 million carried out, and there are some concerns I have there that I'm sure Representative Gunter shares with me, where the youth employment money is zeroed out. That used to be general fund. It was saved last year with workforce development money, and there's nothing in there. There's a one-time appropriation for the Urban Initiative Program of $1 million that then cancels out. There are some other one-time programs, the biggest one being the Minnesota Investment Fund for $7 million. The other smaller agencies basically get compensation adjustments, with cosmetology and barber's board getting two new positions, maybe three, I can't remember. Representative Gunther might want to comment on that. And finally, the biggest other division we have is the Department of Labor and Industry, where there's basically a shift from general fund money to fees for the construction code division. So, members, that is basically the money in our budget. I am, again, would like to emphasize that, you know, this tuition problem, we've had students from all over the state, from all different colleges, including the publics and privates and private for-profits and private not-for-profits, and the stories we're hearing, I think both my colleagues from the other side of the aisle, I can attest to it, are frightening, the debt loads. A lot of us here at this table, except for Representative Sirtis, when we graduated from high school, the technical colleges were free, and now we're hearing stories of people coming out of the technical schools with $20,000 in debt, and we had some folks from the university talking about $40,000 and $60,000 in debt. So I would hope that, Mr. Chair, that you would treat me kind, and I know there are dollars I could probably move around in this budget with the support of the committee, but I still think we need a little bit more money for the tuition problem. And with that, unless there are questions, Chair.
Well, let's take the rest of the testimony first, if we may. Mr. Norris, Representative Norris, welcome to the committee.
I will just add a little bit more to what Representative Rukavina mentioned. I'm looking at the governor's budget request, and that brings the total spending to higher education at $3.22 billion, based on the recommendation that the governor has. It also increases the state grant program, which is another way to offset some of the tuition increases. But I guess the only thing I would basically add or emphasize is the issue of tuition. I think that's been our focus, to really address that as much as we can this session. And I can't speak for the University of Minsk directly, but I believe that I'm confident that if they were to receive their request, anything above their request would apply directly to reducing the tuition below that 4% that they're now talking about. So the more money that we can allocate to higher education, I think it would directly buy down the tuition increase. Not to zero, perhaps, but it would get us closer to that. So,
okay.
With that,
Representative Gunther, welcome.
Thank you.
Your portion is the workforce development, I understand.
That's correct. The Jobs Committee in the last few years, as Representative Clark can attest to, has been hit pretty hard. Average probably a 30% cut every year for the last 3 years, and now for the first time we're having a slight increase, not enough to make up for what we lost certainly, but the budget recommendations represent a 12% increase in the budget compared to a 35% decrease. That's a huge jump, but certainly, the governor's budget has $10 million of one-time funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund, and that hasn't had that kind of money for a long time. Redevelopment Fund and Urban Initiatives Program, these are programs that help our individual towns and to attract business and have those business, our industrial parks fixed up. I think it's a very important investment. $5 million for voc rehab for the blind and to maximize federal assistance, and the Jobs Committee hasn't been able to do that in all cases in the last few years, so it's good to see that we're paying attention to getting the most federal money we can. Of the money from the Jobs Committee, there's about half for deed that comes from federal money, and we have to make sure that we maximize those funds whenever we can. We have $1.25 million one-time money for the Bio-Business Alliance in Minnesota. This is one of the programs that truly provides jobs and good-paying jobs. And this Bioscience Business Alliance takes it the extra step from that of research into commercialization so we can produce jobs. And the bioscience industry produces many jobs in small businesses, 10 or 12 persons per business. And they can go in literally anywhere in the state. So it's something that we all look forward to seeing those kind of jobs spin off, and they can grow in a very short period of time to 100 to 200 person industry. So those are the kind of things I'm looking forward to. We have to make sure we take care of our smaller towns with septic and sewage treatment programs. We're asking for $100,000 for the PFA funding for technical assistance grants for Minnesota's smallest communities, and these are not building new sewage treatment plants. These are updating septic systems so they do comply with the MPCA's and the PFA's requirements. So where we don't have as much money as we could use, so I'm going to be quiet real quickly.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Kahn, you had a question?
A question on what you said about the permits changing from general fund to fees. My guess is that that was one of the things that we had said that just for better look at, we should channel the money through the general fund, that it wasn't. So what you're just doing is you're taking that oversight of having fees that are just directly appropriated. I don't know that if it's any, my guess is that there isn't any difference in where the money came from for those? I'm just trying. Do you remember, Mr. Chairman, that was the time that we got rid of as many dedicated funds as we could and changed them, made them all go through the general fund? And I just want to, and now each year I watch a number of them come back, and I just want to know if that's along with that list.
Mr. Chair, do you know if this is a new fee or is it a...
Chair, and I can have Mr. Burke come down, but I think it's being taken off the general fund and put on...
There's a bunch of different changes. I'm Doug Burton, fiscal analyst. They are both raising and lowering fees. They are moving some fees out of the general fund. They are moving other fees. They're consolidating fees that are in three different areas, general fund, like special revenue fund, and in a third area, and they're trying to consolidate those all in one place, and also changing the whole fee structure at the same time. So it's a very complicated set of changes.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that it's probably not a saving. It's probably something, without fully knowing exactly, it's probably not a saving to the general fund. It's probably one of the things where the fees at one point went into a special fund, and because we were interested in getting better legislative oversight over these, we pointed out that you could, for an activity that's being paid by fees, instead of going through the setting up of a special fund for it, you could actually just have it be an account that you kept track of, and you could just budget out of the general fund, and it meant that the legislature would look at it a little bit more carefully than it does on the special fund. So I just wanted to know. And
just let me interrupt, if I may.
Yep.
The chief fiscal staff said there is a proposal in some of these for them to become a statutory appropriation as opposed to a biennial appropriation, and I would caution the committee to look at that kind of a change. So if you have a statutory appropriation, you never see them again, and as opposed to an annual or biennial appropriation. So I would caution, I think Phyllis and I and probably the rest of the committee are on that same page in that, hopefully.
Mr. Chair, having been tutored by Representative Kahn about 10 years ago, state government finance, I would take your advice.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clarification question for Representative Gunther. You said you're asking for $100,000 for the septic tank?
$100,000 and $100,000 for the biennium. It is for technical assistance only for the smallest towns that have septic systems in there. And there's a point where they will not build a sewage treatment plant, and these are the towns that we're talking about.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Representative Keller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, could you speak to a piece of the governor's budget, this piece in higher ed called additional performance bonuses, and what testimony you've had on that at this point?
Well, I think if you're referring to the additional performance bonuses of $25 million of one-time money, both at the university and Minsky, there's some criteria spelled out in his budget that I believe the Office of Higher Education, or in consultation with some IFA consultants, will determine if they meet these benchmarks. And then the second year of the biennium, they'll release that money. But it's just it's one-time money. And I believe the bonuses can be dispersed to, they're going to be dispersed to the university. Mr. Berg, would it be for salary compensation or for both programs and salaries?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, specify what the purpose of the funding is. It just lays out five criteria for each system. If each system is certified to have met three of those five, they get the $25 million bonus.
Hmm.
Okay. I'm going to apply that concept to us here. The one way for us to close that per diem gap.
I've already met the three of the five. Okay, other questions of the committee? If not, thank you very much for appearing before us. And drive safely on the way home.
Thanks for moving it up.
So I have a bill tomorrow, and I was hoping that the representative... Curtis, come in on tape that he'll babysit me tonight.
Sure.
Bring some hot soup over.
Yes.
Okay, the next one's on the agenda. We want to bring up transportation finance. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the as far as reviewing the governor's budget related to the items we deal in our committee, which is basically the Department of Transportation and Department of part of Department of Public Safety, most of the monies that we deal with are dedicated funds. So really, that's pretty much established. The only difference we have in the governor has a request in a supplemental budget dealing with transit, which deals with rural transit and metro transit, and what that would be a small appropriation to continue the level of service they have now to the end of this fiscal year. And the other only alternative or question we had, not question we had, but in the aeronautics division of MnDOT, a few years ago, I think it's 3 years ago, $15 million was transferred out of the aeronautics fund and put into the basically in the general fund, and that was to be repaid. Well, they didn't show when it's going to be repaid, but actually $12 million of that had been repaid. And the question that is our concern, the aeronautics division really hasn't seen any increase in funding, and we had some hearings on it. We recognize there are going to be some problems as far as our aeronautics or aviation industry in the state of Minnesota if we don't address those issues. And basically there's not much of a change in those issues, and that's about the issues in the governor's budget, other than, like I say, we deal with dedicated funds, and those are pretty much by formula in the first place. You can't really change much of that. And the other thing, the one thing that was lacking in the governor's budget, he didn't indicate how he's going to get additional funding other than the bonding portion, which he had was $1.7 billion, which would be funded by that portion of MnDOT monies that they get out of the constitutional amendment. As you're aware, the constitutional amendment is phased in over 5 years, so the first year monies that he get, that would be used to pay the principal and interest for the $1.7 billion in subsequent years. That's how the governor would use that constitutional amendment money, the MBIS money.
Okay.
That's about it.
Mr. Magnus, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to come and visit with you tonight. Just talking to Bernie, one of the things in the governor's proposal is for the Department of Public Safety is a proposal to add 40 state troopers. Some of those will be for capital security also. And so there is a funding request increase in there to do that. But basically, as Representative Weider said, our funding is coming from the federal level and basically dedicated fund. There will be some money also for compensation adjustment in both departments, and that's in there. But otherwise,
can I ask a question concerning the additional troopers, Highway Patrol? Is the governor proposing to fund those out of the traditional way of from the truck highway fund money?
He was, and
including the capital security, or is there a breakdown in that?
No, that's correct, Mr. Chair. That's normally comes out of the trunk highway fund.
Okay. He is asking, Mr. Chairman, for a 75-cent increase in the driver's license fee, and that's the driver's license is good for 4 years, so that's where he's asking to get some of the money to fund some of that.
So that's some of that comes to in for that particular purposes. Representative Sturge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a Magnus. I was at the credit union meeting when they all came down to the Capitol on January 25th at the Kelly Inn with Minority Leader Seifert, and he discussed a super secret plan, transportation plan, that he was going to unveil soon. that was going to solve issues here, and haven't heard about it yet. It's been about a month. Wondering, as the lead Republican, are you familiar, as he shared with you, the super secret transportation plan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, I don't have that high a clearance yet.
Okay.
I will say, though, Mr. Chairman, as we look at funding proposals, and Representative Leader and I have been scratching our heads about this for quite some time, and it's my understanding we're going to go through the governor's proposal on transportation next week and have discussions with our committee, and of course we'll have discussions with our caucuses. And we've been working with the Senate back and forth, and with the governor's staff and the agencies, and we'll continue to do that. Basically, right now we're looking at all possible options. We know, everyone understands, we need additional funding for transportation. The question is how we do it, but Representative Reeder and I are committed to do our best to try to help resolve some of the transportation funding problem.
Representative Swigel.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm not sure that anything can ever be super. Three different questions, if I could, though, as I better understand this. And neither one of you, Mr. Magnus or Mr. Leader, I thought the governor had recommended $100 million of cash, $100 million mm-hmm. from the general fund into the trunk highway system. Did he not? Neither one of you referred to
it? Yes, that's correct, he did.
Yeah. Okay, both of you, for some reason, overslipped that. I think it's pretty significant that the governor is doing that. And some would say it's a holdover until MBES kicks in, to tide us over, whatever, to the bonding takes place, whatever. But there was $100 million, I think the governor has in his budget, rather significant. The aeronautics, Representative Leader, you were talking about the aeronautics, $15 million. How does that work? If we do nothing at the legislature, doesn't that money get paid back sometime July 1st? Or do we have to pay the legislature?
Mr. Representative?
Mr. Chair, Representative Swigum, that's correct. It has to be legislative action because there was no provision on the payback. It just said it should be payback. And regarding the $100 million, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that because that kind of fill-in, as you said, that was to pick up for the slack between the shortfall that we would have now and by the time the bonding bill would kick in.
Yeah, I think it kind of serves as a bridge, but the aeronautics $50 million will take some legislative action.
$12 million. It takes legislative action. That's correct.
I know. Isn't it a June 30th, July 1st date or something like that that we put in the law?
In the governor's budget, I think he's going to show that. In this fiscal year, it's a transfer, and it says if money is available to that extent, otherwise it would be carried beyond. But it shows $6 million in the next mm-hmm. first year, the next biennium, and $6 million in the second year of the next biennium.
And then, Mr. Chairman, just kind of last
question,
what two of you thought about the governor's bonding proposal of the $1.7 billion, you referred to it. I think it's an awesome, great idea, by the way, just to tell you the truth. Pay it off with the MBES funds that are going to come in. And simple thinking, and tell me where I'm wrong. Asphalt goes up by 40%. Concrete goes up by 30%. Steel is going up by, 25-30% a year? Pretty close to those numbers. If you can buy bonds for 5%, what is the bond rate right now? 4.5%, 5.5%. If you can buy bonds for 5% and build now and avoid those 30%, 40%, 50% increases, doesn't that make a lot of sense? Say the one of you.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum, it does, but I'd like to respond and state the condition of the MnDOT right now. And if I do that, it could take a few minutes, but that's the rationale behind. Even that new influx of bonding money is not going to change much other than we'll be lucky if we can hold a preservation status. Because you aren't going to throw the $1.7 billion in 1 year. You can't accommodate that. You're going to take it, in a 10-year period.
I think it's over a 10-year period
right.
of time. But the concept. We can always use more. We can spend more through every chair who's come up here, I'm sure. But the concept of doing the bonding building now when it's maybe going to be cheaper than asphalt going up another 40% next year or whatever goes up next year, concrete road on Morton. The concept, Mr. Magnus, seems to make sense.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, you're exactly right. We've got a big hole to fill, and the costs are going up tremendously. You didn't, I don't know if you mentioned land costs, but the labor costs are going up. And
on
that, too.
Yeah, you
just,
know.
Just to, let's go, kind of go through the chair a little bit. That's okay. I'm pretty lax. But you're right. We've got a big pile of dirt in front of us to chew on, and that's why Representative Leader and I are committed to looking at all options, and certainly bonding with the situation we're in my view, has to be part of it. When you look at a project like Crosstown, now looking at $300 million, you're talking about significant monies out there. For major projects, I personally would like to see a major project account set up and take care of the major projects and then leave when that's normal operations go on, because these major projects have gotten so expensive, bridges and everything else. And I'd like to have a project.
I know.
Yep. Just a small one. You know, I always said that when they fill the cracks in the road, we have a ribbon cutting ceremony. Just a point of correction, if you could. The capital security, I think, is a general fund obligation, because we can't extend to that point.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Magnus did a good job explaining some, but I'd just like to explain, again, I mentioned about the Department of Transportation's fiscal problems. As Representative Magnus pointed out, one of the projects which is going to be built this year and will be let in contract is roughly $300 million. And I think maybe the committee don't understand, the normal contract construction budget of MnDOT is roughly between $500 and $600 million. This year, according to the figures that I have had, I've had two figures from them, the total construction budget is maybe $551 million for the entire state, and another one I had $270 some dollars in their figures. So basically, that's one construction project, $300 million. They're going to do two others, plus we have the Lakota Bridge. So for all practical purposes, the Metro District, and I'm not saying it's wrong because it's a priority, is roughly between $500 and $600 million right now. That's the normal construction budget. So in essence, if we don't get any other monies, technically you could say there's nothing left without state, or we're going to call it outside of the metro area. And you say, well, how can that happen? Well, metro projects normally are 2 to 3 years, so the $600 million is authorized, but you don't pay it all out every year, because you only pay out what's constructed. So you probably spend it in the 3 years, but nevertheless, that's why we have a problem. You still have to show in the books that you've let that contract for 600, whatever they are, 500 or 600 million. That about takes, that's your total budget, as I explained. And this is the first year that MnDOT shows an unreserved cash balance in the past few months in the negative. They normally carry $100 to $200 million in the cash and their unreserved balance. That's zero right now. So we got a real problem. The addition of the bonding monies would be fine, but it doesn't really put much into the whole system.
And Mr. Chairman, that's why Representative Swigum's point about the one-time money is important. If we could increase that amount of one-time money, that would really help us and get out of the spot we're in, too. So,
go ahead,
Mr.
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. I have another question. After the passage of the MBES last year, there was some controversy as to up to 60, at least 40. So as leads and as chair, are both of you committed to keep that to 60-40? And not let any changes take place in that 60-40 split?
Representative Leader?
Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum, 60-40, correct. I said that's what we're going to have, and the argument comes beyond that, but the 60-40 definitely should be, and I think I'll let him speak, but definitely that committed to keep that.
Representative Magnus?
I'm not aware of any definite move to change it either, Representative Swigum, maybe.
I don't know what happens.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader and I agreed early on that that's the priority here. We've got to do that, and then as a number one priority, and then work our way down on this mountain here we're facing.
Good. Yeah. Just for people's information, there is within the governor's deficiency budget, I think, about $7 million for the shortfall in the MVEST, or not, I guess it would be part of the MVEST monies for transit. Both, some of that's the rural, but most of it metro, in this fiscal year, and that's an issue that we're going to have to be dealing with. But Bill says it's 8.3.
That's correct. That's in a supplemental budget.
Supplemental budget this year, that's correct. Finish this group. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yep.
And, you know, we kind of, did we, yesterday, Representative Reeder, before you go, a belated happy birthday to you.
Oh.
I don't remember that it ever gets a holiday on his birthday.
Representative Virginius, can we have you come approach us, along with Representative Osmond? Is he here? Sure, that's fine.
This is the way we are doing our budget.
And you said Representative Osmond is...
We all just came out of a vote.
We'll send someone to try to get him, if he's available. If you want, you want us to wait for Representative Osmond, and we could then take one of the other committees first?
Yeah.
Okay. Taxes. Well, let's take taxes then. Because I want Representative Osmond to participate from the beginning as well. So the four people from taxes. We have property tax, and we'll get one more chair up there someplace.
Seven. He had to leave.
Oh, he had to leave? Okay, I'm sorry.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, before we start, I think I can shed some light on the issue that was being discussed between Representative Leader and Representative Swigum on the governor has $100 million in the transportation budget. I know Representative Leader just left, but the tax committee would want you to all know that that's money that's in the tax committee, and that's money that's never been carried in the transportation committee. So you can imagine the tax committee probably is not keen on that concept. Maybe the transportation committee will be bipartisanly, but what that $100 million is basically sales tax exemptions that would leave a $100 million hole in the tax committee's budget if those were implemented. And there are three provisions. They are the...
The governor has also put $100 million of cash into the transit. So there's two. There's your $100 million and there's another $100 million as well.
And Mr. Chair, if I'm correct, $100 million in cash is one time. The $100 million that I'm now talking about is permanent.
Yes.
So it is a hole to be filled if the legislature decides to do it. And it's really transferring the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue. It's exempting MnDOT from sales tax purchases from doing certain roads. And it's exempting North Star Commuter Rail. And I think the one of those three that we've had some precedent in the tax committee in the 8 years I've served on it is the North Star component. It was done for Hiawatha. That's a $7 million price. But the other $93 million is something that has not been contemplated in the time I've been on the tax committee. So we would have that tussle with you, Mr. Chair. If you are looking to, with the speaker, to move that $100 million, then we'll need to fill a $100 million hole in the tax committee. So,
okay. Just well, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, you're on the tax committee, so you know we're having a great time. And
well, before you start, I said the other day in the tax committee, I spent most of my career representing Swigum in spending bills on the appropriation side. My first time on the tax committee. And I finally found out that they like to spend money too, so there's a great deal of expenditures in the tax committee, and we appreciate you coming before us.
And thank you for that, Mr. Chair. We are 9.6% of the budget on the expenditure side. Of course, we're a much larger share on the revenue side, most of the revenue. What I think members ought to expect from the tax committee this year is we're looking to do the majority of our work in the property tax area, and Representative Markert will talk about that. But we know the debate in the legislature is between sort of program property tax relief and individual property tax relief. And our goal is to do both. We care about LGA and county aid. We care about individual payments for the property tax refunds, for the market study credits, for senior deferrals. So we're trying to balance the state, and we're interested in them all. Part of that will be buying back some school levies, and I know Representative Marquardt and Representative Dreiling have scheduled a joint property tax relief, K-12, and other issues meeting coming up, and Representative Marquardt will probably mention that too. Some of the other things we'll look at that'll, you know, come after property tax stuff would be that we're going to take an aggressive look at foreign operating corporations. This is something we've talked about a long time here, and we're going to scrutinize and look at options there. Another area we'll be looking at is increasing tax compliance. Members who have been around for a while know we've kind of taken three runs at that. The Department of Revenue has been successful in finding resources for us there, and we'll be looking at that and asking them what more they can do, and Representative Khan and I are having a joint hearing on that, on those, in those two committees, to take a better look. Another area we're going to work on is federal conformity. We heard the concerns of many members bipartisanly on the floor as we passed House File 8 in the first couple weeks of session, and I know that Representative Paulson had some good ideas he brought forward on the floor and others, and we're going to spend some time trying to look at more conformity, as is the governor. We also know that many members bipartisanly are very interested in tax credits. The Tax Committee in general is not a fan of tax credits, and I think you all understand that. I mean, the Tax Committee charges to find revenue to run the state. It is not an appropriations committee, so we would ask authors to think about appropriations bills, but we will definitely spend time debating credits and whether or not they're appropriate to the tax code. We also want to find ways to make the whole tax system more progressive, and we are looking to the tax incident reports, which comes out on March 25th, to see where we're at with all our large taxes, and then we'd like to build more progressivity into the tax. I think another area the Tax Committee will spend time on is accountability for subsidies. We have many subsidies in the tax system through JobZs, through TIFs, through corporate subsidies, and we'll be looking to have more accountability in those tax preferences. And then I'd say beyond that, we're going to, of course, the governor has many options in here. We've heard his proposals. We'll continue to take more testimony on them. We think he's got some good ideas there. We think he has some good ideas that we probably can't afford. But we have some things we're in agreement on, and so we'll be weighing them together, but all within the context of property tax relief being the first priority of the Tax Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have just Representative Simpson go next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank Representative Lincheski for the openness that she's presenting in front of the Tax Committee. As everybody that's been in there has seen that we've heard a lot of bills from both sides of the aisle already, and there's a lot of good ideas that are coming across, and from tax conformity to tax raisers to neutrality. So I think we're headed in the right direction to put together a good tax bill for the state. And I think that's the one thing that that I've learned in my time on the committee and with Representative Lincheski, is that we're looking for good broad-based tax policy for the state, and that's going to be our goal, to try and do that. And we've heard what a lot of people had to say, and we're going to try and work within that perimeter to get there. So.
All right, thank you. I guess I am taking over for Chair Solberg. So, Representative Mark.
Cool. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And before the Mr. Chair goes, I would like to thank the committee and the chair for holding these type of meetings, because transparency in government is something we need to move towards, and I think that this goes a long ways in doing that. And believe me, residents want to be heard. And just today, I'll have you note that we just went over the 500 mark on the property tax comment line. So residents want to be part of this process. And meetings like this, I know the Ways and Means Committee has been going out and about, goes a long ways to bringing residents into the fold and being part of this solution. So I do commend the chair and the committee for doing that. As we heard the last year or two, property tax is a huge issue. They're skyrocketing, and you're hearing from senior citizens and families and farmers and businesses, and I'm encouraged to know that that's one of the top priorities we have. Speaker Kelleher and the House has made that a top priority, and it's something that residents are demanding we do, and I'm confident we are going to provide that relief. And, Mr. Chair, just to give you a little idea of the magnitude of the situation we're facing, since 2002, in the last 5 years, from 2002 to 2007, we've seen property taxes statewide go from $4.6 billion to $6.8 billion. That's $2.2 billion increase, about 48%. And to put that into perspective, that's about, in 5 years, a property tax increase of about $1,300 per family. $1,300. And it's also really hitting senior citizens and farmers and businesses. And, you know, there's many reasons for that. We could look at many, but I do want to point out a couple. And one is the cuts that we've seen to our local counties and cities. And that's totaled about $1 billion since 2002. About $626 million of cuts in local government aid. These are actual true dollars. They're now, we're not counting inflation, actually true cuts. About $230 million cuts to county program aid, and almost $100 million cuts in market value homestead credits that were cuts to cities, about 103 cities that do not receive the local government aid. So there's been increases in cities and counties, but the largest increase actually has been in our schools, where it's gone from about $986 million in 2002 to now revenues or tax of about $1.8 billion, about an 80% increase. And, Mr. Chair, one of the major reasons for that, Madam Chair, one of the major reasons for that has to do with our equalization. When you have equalization levels frozen and market values going up, we're seeing in cases of schools that had debt services, and they might have told the residents, you know, out of this $200,000 we're going to have to pay per year, $100,000 is going to be our levy, $100,000 is going to come from the state. And in a matter of 2 or 3 years, they get past that equalization level, and all of a sudden, all $200,000 of it is through levy. And then people are wondering and asking school board members, how did this happen? So one of the things that we're looking at in all of this, local government aid, county program aid, and also our equalization levels, is to inflate those, index those. So it will move up with property values. And so if you go in on a situation where it's 50-50, levy plus aid, it will stay very close to that over time. And I think that would be a huge component of any property tax relief that we do. I do want to mention also, and I talked to Representative Earhart before he left, and he's brought something up to committee that I had not thought about before. And he talks a lot about the lack of transportation funding being a huge property tax problem. Because our cities and our counties, because they're not receiving enough state aid through the county state aid and the municipal state aid, are having to put millions of dollars into roads that they normally would get aid from the state. And I know he's working on something. That's been great that he's brought to this committee, but the lack of transportation funding is a property tax issue that we also have to look at. I don't think we're going to be doing transportation bills in the division, but it is all related. In general, what our bill, House File 3 right now, kind of the approach, kind of the template or the framework, involves six main points. It is, first of all, increasing equalization levies in the school, and we're going to be working very closely with Representative Dreiling. We have a joint levy meeting, the Battle of the Levies, March 13th, right here. That's, I don't know what time it is. Pay-per-view television, but at any rate, we're going to hear all the levy bills, because really that's where the division and the K-12 come together, and we'll be working very close on that. Also, an increase in local government aid being indexed, increase in county program aid being indexed, property tax refund program, expansion market value homestead credit and senior deferral program also being expanded. So those are kind of the parameters that we're setting. Now, Madam Chair, and I know you wanted to know a little bit about the governor's plan, and actually the governor's plan pushes many of the same buttons that our approach does and moves in the right direction on many of those areas. The big concern is that it's way too light when it comes to permanent property tax relief. But the governor increases local government aid, and that's very encouraging, because the governor is recognizing that local government aid is part of property tax relief. He expands the market value homestead credit. He also increases equalization on the operating capital, which is something that we are also doing, and he expands the homeowner's property tax refund. So those four elements are four of the six that we have basically in our template. And they're there, it's good, they're too light, but we can always work on that. Now, there are some one-time funding that the governor puts into his property tax relief, and that is $40 million for one-time targeted case management for counties to make up for the loss of those federal dollars. So that's $40 million one time. There is about $5 million for short-term offenders. The one area where I really tend to go in a separate direction is the levy limits that the governor is placing on those cities that receive 33% or more of their levy plus aid from local government aid. That will impact 87 cities, I think all but one rural cities that are the most in need. And the problem with the levy limit is that it's not fair. It doesn't get to the root of why we have property tax increases, and in the long term, it actually raises property taxes. That's the problem with those. So what we're doing, our major goals in comparison with the governor, is we are looking to provide less reliance on property taxes. We want to make sure that there isn't this push from income and sales taxes on the property taxes, because when that occurs, you begin having the have and have nots between communities that can and cannot, and also really hits the senior citizens and farmers. We're also looking at not one-time property tax relief, but permanent property tax relief that is fair and equal throughout the state, and also looking at stable and predictable revenue sources for cities. We also are going to make a big focus on making this system a little less regressive, adding some progressivity to it by expanding the homeowner's property tax refund program, where if you have a high property tax in comparison to your income, we target that relief. That would really help senior citizens. So I guess in conclusion, what we are going to propose is a plan that will say this is the end of the state pushing higher taxes onto the backs of our property owners, onto the backs of our senior citizens and our families, our farmers and our businesses. And I think with that and working with the governor, we can do that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, committee. Our panel, do we have any questions? Yes. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any of you, I'm just wondering if you're over there busy spending all this money on property tax relief, which is a good thing, but then where are we getting the money for us and the rest of the divisions to spend?
For me or...
That's why they're
here. Madam, was that a rhetorical question?
Madam Chair, Representative Bradley, I think that's yet to be determined.
All right. Representative Dean. Oh, Representative Blincheski.
Thank you. I think that's the tax expenditure part, which this committee gives a target to. As far as the revenue side, the tax committee raises $6 billion a year in income tax, it raises over $4 billion a year in sales, and it raises $1 billion in corporate right now. So that is the revenue side that's coming in already. Some of those have problems, and some of them need to be fixed, maybe raised a little, reduced a little, restructured. Maybe the progressivity needs to change. In some cases, the corporate tax may need to be abolished. But we have the revenue side over there, and that $15 billion a year that's coming in is paying for all the other committees. So that is also in the control of the tax committee. But we're addressing the tax expenditure side, which is about $3.9 billion.
So, Madam Chair, so you're not, what you're talking about today is just the expenditure side of the tax committee. Another day we'll hear about the other side.
Representative Blincheski.
Madam Chair, I don't know what Representative Solberg's planning to do about the other side, but if he's bringing us back again or not. But I think this is the finance component.
Representative Solberg?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that those are legitimate questions as well on both sides of the structure.
All right, thank you.
And Madam Chair, if I may, and Representative Riley, you know, we are the only committee that does both, so it's always confusing. But the items we were actually, I think, addressing, we view as the spending side that would fall only within the tax committee's target and not anyone else's.
Right, Madam Chair.
Representative Briley.
I do understand that you have both, and I do understand what you're talking about. Relief. I think that's a good thing, you know, not to force local governments to raise property taxes or to have schools continually fail levies because property taxpayers at the local level are so sick and tired of all property taxes, and of course the only thing they can do then is vote down the school levies. But, you know, I am also committed to, you know, the things we're trying to do in education on the spending side, but we don't get to raise that money. We have to deal with whatever is raised in the tax committee. So I was actually serious about, you know, I heard the foreign operating corporations looking for some money there and collections. How much money is that going to raise? And then where are we getting the rest?
Representative Mike Winchester.
I can't tell you exactly how those things will raise. There are many foreign operation corporation FLC approaches, mm-hmm. and they raise from probably $160 million a year at the top. So that's up to the committee if they're going to pass them and if they believe in them and if they want them, and we'll take testimony from everybody involved. In compliance mm-hmm. of that, you know, the $15 billion I just mentioned between sales income and corporate, you know, we're missing $1 billion a year in compliance. Can we get $1 billion a year? No, can't do that. I mean, there's limits to how much you can get. That's undetermined. I think we were trying to find out when with Representative Khan and I, when we meet, we want to ask the Department of Revenue to really try to help us know how much can we really get. Then, of course, there are other revenue sources, and we are waiting for all members to throw those bills in.
I have.
And I know Representative Khan already did, and we heard that cosmetic surgery bill and the fun hearing. And so we will be hearing members' revenue-raising ideas, but there have only been a few put in so far, and they're coming, so I'm sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I might just add that on the FOCs, in 2005, we made some big changes in the FOCs. And we're waiting for a report that should be back here in March sometime that will give us some revenue and give us some idea of what the changes have been made. If you look at the corporate intake from the last 2 years since the 2005 changes, there's been a tremendous amount of increase there already. So I think this fictitious number of 160 or 180 or whatever is pretty much pie in the sky. I think people better not be looking for such a high number because I don't think it's there.
All right. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to call on Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lincheski, I don't sit on the Tax Committee, and I'm just kind of, you know, looking at it from the outside, but I saw from the Senate that they're talking about revenue enhancements and talking about a little bit of extra money. We're talking about the $2 billion in surplus. Kind of maybe it's there, maybe it's not there, maybe it's kind of there. From what I'm hearing is that there's not enough revenue and that we might be looking at raising taxes. And, you know, when I go in the coffee cottage all the time, that give me my French roast, they say, we're going to raise taxes. I said, I don't know, I'll find out. So now that I got you here, has there been any discussions or what have the discussions been in the Tax Committee with regard to raising taxes?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Dean, members are very divided on that issue. That's probably not a surprise. I think, you know, members have not really grabbed the mic and told us exactly which tax increases they want or don't want and which ones they'll vote for. But I think you can imagine the committee is similar to the rest of the legislature in that it's divided in that opinion as to whether or not we need revenues beyond the one-time money. And then we would maybe disagree on what's truly there in ongoing money. I think the right process for us will be to follow the February forecast numbers, which aren't clear what might happen there. And I should say that also plays into the foreign operating corporation debate because revenue has itself asked us to not hear the foreign operating corporation bills till the forecast is out because at that time, what Representative Simpson said is absolutely right, it will change the forecast of or the revenue estimates themselves depending on what they learn. So, you know, as we see the forecast come out, then that will be the question for the entire legislature. Does it feel it needs more revenue? And if the entire legislature says it does, then it is our charge to find it. And I actually appreciate that you recognize that that is what is our main charge. We have many legislators who want their tax committee to be an appropriations committee, and we're really trying to stay focused on the charge. And so would I predict if we'll raise more revenues than what we might find in some of the areas I've already highlighted? You know, I won't make that prediction now. I think in this room, everybody's divided. And so I think we're not sure yet, and then other committee chairs need to do the work with their leads to tell us, do they need more money? And that's kind of above my pay scale that someone else is going to tell us that we need more money. And,
all right.
And so I appreciate that.
Representative Solberg, you were going to respond.
Let me respond a little bit, because I sat in the tax committee hearings, Representative Dean. I think there's been one bill that Representative Chesky has heard to raise revenues, and that's been Representative Kahn's. So she's received a lot of print on it as a result. But as I sat in one meeting...
I'll point out, Mr. Chairman, not all of it's good.
But I sat in one meeting, and there was one bill for about $700 million in tax decreases, and next bill was about $240, and the next bill was $180 permanent tax increase for particular special interests, if you want to call them that, or maybe absolutely good policy without any question. But the question was asked them, well, how do you pay for that as well? And the response was, well, that's your job.
Mm-hmm.
And my response was back that if you're going to go down that road, that the special interest then should be able to also say, this is an alternative for you. That's the kind of testimony I would like to see when we come in with those type of proposals. These are some other alternatives, whether it be additional ways to raise money, or do you want to cut the education, or do you want to shift it, or whatever. But that's the kind of thing I'd like to see happen.
Thank you. Representative Sweetum.
Madam Chair, thank you. First, just a comment, and then maybe a question of Representative Marquardt, if I could, in relationship to the aggregation of the property tax increase that you were referring to. The comment is, I think, to Representative Dean and Representative Growney, there will not be a tax increase. Mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5 months ago, I was on numerous forums with the majority leader, now speaker, and myself, on tape, which I have the tape. We both committed that there wouldn't be any rate tax increases of any type, whether we're talking statewide property, whether we're talking FOCs, whether we're talking cosmetic surgeries or income tax. Both her and I committed to it, so I think we can rule that out. And honestly, 9.3% increase, $2.2 billion surplus, we ought to be able to live within that. We'll make it. My question, I think, to Mr. Marquardt is this. You talked about the aggregate increase in various property taxes, some due to LGA reductions and some due to other reductions. I happen to believe LGA is very poor property tax relief, you know that. I think it's terrible property tax relief. But it takes care of other things. It does other things, but don't sell it as property tax relief. You aggregated a few increases in property tax burden. If I were going to go back to those same years and take, for instance, things like the transit tax, which we reduced or eliminated, I believe, did we not? And aggregate that with the school takeover, which we did in 2001, 2002, which would all be savings to property taxpayers. And Representative Marquardt, if I were going to aggregate that as to the property tax savings, as well as maybe some other property tax reductions permanent, do you know what type of number I'd come up to there?
Madam Chair and Representative Swigum, I think in 2002, the year before the 2001, it was about $5 billion. Was the total amount that was paid in. And then after the 2001 reform, it went to about 4.5, 4.6. And that's the number I was using. Now, if you go from 5.0 to 6.8, that's still about a 36, 38% increase, even after the reform. And that's why if we do something this year, we have to make sure it's permanent and it's not just a one-time shot that we lose right away. And part of the problem with the 2001 reform is that we promised to take over all of the education funding and we backed off on that. So that was part of it. Now, why we did that, we can talk about that, but, you know, that is one of the reasons education taxes are up. But also, after 2001 is when all the cuts to the counties and the cities also occurred. So a number of things kind of exacerbated each other that led then to this spiraling property tax increase.
Right, thank you.
My follow-up question, and Representative Marquardt, you did some aggregating of some property tax burdens from year to year because of the changes that were made. if I were going to, I think in 2001, 2002, the changeover, the state took over property taxes, the number $900 million sticks in my mind as to what the state takeover was, the savings to local property taxes. Now, that was $900 million in 2001, $900 million in 2002, $900 million in 2003, savings to property taxpayers. The transit takeover was, what, a couple hundred million, and other property tax changes we made that were permanent. If you aggregated them and sold them as property tax savings that taxpayers would have otherwise have had, can staff come up with a number for me on that?
Representative Mark.
Madam Chair and Representative Swigum, I probably could. I don't have those numbers right now. I do have the
on
numbers.
The other side,
Representative Swigum.
Madam Chair, I haven't finished quite yet. I do have a report from March 26, 2004, House Research Department that looked at all of the 2001 property tax stuff. And the relief due to education takeover, here state total was $880 million, and transit levy relief was 99.5 is what they have as a total here on these numbers.
About a billion.
Representative
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, about a billion.
Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, that's correct. And that's why we saw a decrease from 2001 into 2002, down from $5 billion down to 4.5 or 4.6.
And I'm not making myself clear, Madam Chair. You did an aggregation of increases in property tax cost factor. I want to do the same aggregation from the aggregating, adding together the $1 billion in 2001, the $1 billion in 2002, the $1 billion. I think I could do it pretty quickly. Just those two things into my
Madam Chair,
Representative
Slagum, I don't know what the aggregates are, but I do know what the pain on our property taxpayers are because I'm hearing it every day.
Oh, and I do too.
And so, you know, the fact of the matter is in actual dollars, it's gone from about $4.6 billion in 2002 to $6.8 billion in projected 2007. And when you hear the stories of the property tax increases, it's very real. And so, granted, what we did in 2001, if we hadn't, it would be worse. But unfortunately, much of what we saw in 2001 either was nullified because of cuts to local government aid and county program aid, or due to increased equalization or levies on the schools, or the state actually taking back and what they said. For example, when the operating capital equalization was moved from 22,222 down to 10,700, that was a $60 million increase overnight for our property taxpayers. So, you know, the state has done a lot, and, you know, there's market value increases and other things in the economy, but the fact is there's a lot of pain out there on the part of property taxpayers.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought, if I may, that part of the aggregate debate, though, we have to recall is you have to aggregate in the income tax cuts and foregone revenue. So as you add up everything on the ledger, they're all there. But I do want to comment on something Representative Swigum was saying, and I think Representative Swigum is right that a part of the debate is going to be in this whole is there revenue, and what Representative Dean is asking, you know, what would they be, that kind of stuff. Is, you know, we do need to know what the government plan. And so I, like you, Representative Swigum, you know, you have some strong feelings about what might happen there. And I've asked the governor on a number of occasions this year what he might sign. And I am trying to be cognizant of the governor's attitude toward what revenues are palatable. I don't share the feeling that there are none that are palatable. And I think there are many that are not going to happen. But I think there are some that are there. And so I would ask all members, Republican or Democrat, who feel there should be more revenue to continue to speak with the governor. We need to understand what the governor can work with us on. And we may have strong feelings about who should win. I mean, I'm not particularly interested in that. I'm particularly interested in figuring out what are the needs. And if there are needs for more money, then the tax committee has to find the money. And then what can we work with
to make these sort of things happen. And these are not going to be fun choices. But I do think everybody needs to ask the governor. I do. And I think that all the fiscal chairs and leads and members who are concerned about things need to have that conversation going, because I think one of the problems that I've witnessed just as a minority member for a number of years is that final couple weeks is very difficult around here. And without a lot of communication in February and March and April, May is going to be awful. So I hope everyone will just keep talking and talk to the governor and ask him where he is on revenue. And I would ask, you know, the lead Simpson, who's been done a fabulous job, to try to get some information too for us. Representative Simpson, Madam Chair, has got a secret pen that he sits down the road from me, and it's red. And if we start talking, out there in taxes, that like red pen comes out, and you may all not know that, but that's sort of the looking like a veto area. But we, and we know that the legislature makes the decision. It doesn't have to do what the governor says. That's the case no matter what. And if then the governor has the authority to veto if he doesn't believe in what we believe in, we have to put our priorities forward. But I do think we want to have everyone get heard and not be dug in that it's this person's way or the Senate's way or the House's way. And I just don't think that helps us get where we're trying to go. So far in taxes, I know it's only February. I think we're all trying to do a good job, and we want to continue to do that for the whole state.
All right. I do know that we have one more question. It was Representative McNamara. If we could keep it brief in honor of the time of day.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have two questions I'd like to ask. One, I find it interesting, Representative Lincheski, that based on the fact that the governor has presented a budget that's $2.9 billion more, 9.3%, you want to ask all of us to weigh in that we're all under the assumption that that's not enough, that much of an increase. And I'm just wondering, you must be getting different emails from different folks than I'm getting. Because I'm having people emailing me and saying, my wages aren't going up 9.3%. Our household income, we have to live within much less than that. And when you presented your information, you said currently up to $160 million. I certainly, from what I want to make sure I understand you right, you absolutely believe we should have more money than that. We can't live within those means, because as I heard you talk about right now, that's where we're at. Representative Marquardt certainly laid out all the desires in that they were going to need to have more. The way I understand it, we're not the federal government. We can only spend what we're going to bring in. And I'm just wondering, you must have different constituency than I have.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question and the opportunity to clarify. Get that impression. That's not what I think. I think 134 legislators get to decide whether or not they need revenue. I don't think we know that yet. I think bipartisanly people need to figure that out, and then the charge will come to the tax committee to find it if the answer is yes, we need more. I don't think we know that until all the chairs make a decision if they need more money, and we have to wait for the forecast. So I have not made that determination. It may be that we do not. I can tell you, however, from the tax perspective, what people may not be aware is that the governor's proposal reduces the amount of income tax that we have currently in law and the amount of sales tax. So there are general fund changes that actually bring income tax cuts in his proposal and sales tax cuts, 100 just going off to transportation. So what the governor is actually proposing is reducing the revenues to the state of Minnesota in the income area and the sales area. So we need to be cognizant as to how that all weighs out. And many of people don't think of them as income tax, reducing credits, reducing revenue to the state. But if you do a military credit or a dairy credit, that's reducing income to the state. If you give a sales tax exemption to someone or a corporate subsidy to someone, you're decreasing the pot of revenue for everything else. So the governor's proposal on net actually reduces income and sales tax receipts to the state. And it's something we have to be cognizant of.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative McNamara?
I'll pass on it, Madam Chair. Thank
all right.
You.
Representative Chumper, and then I really do want to move to our final committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say, somewhat in response to Representative McNamara, I do hear from people every day who encourage us to seriously look at raising taxes. These are often deeply religious people are concerned about the levels of homelessness in this state, that we aren't funding public education the way they feel it should be funded. People are concerned about the fact that nursing home reimbursement rates have been frozen for the last 4 years, and their elderly family members are really imperiled because of that. So, you know, maybe my email and my verbal communications are with a totally different group of people, but those are the communications that I have every single day and every single week since I've gotten elected.
Thank you, Representative Chumper. I think I'd like to thank the tax committee. All three of you did a very commendable job in responding to some tough questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Joaquinos and Representative Osment, if you could please come up. Did Representative Hansen have to leave?
Madam Chair, he did. He has an event in his district. He was here because our Environment Finance Committee has a subcommittee that is dealing with the budget that goes to the Board of Water and Soil.
All right. Well, I'm so sorry that we went beyond his time.
Well, I am cognizant of the time. I think you're cognizant of the time. So we will be as brief as we can be. I'm going to highlight two. We have the Pollution Control Agency, DNR budget, and the Bowser budget. I'm going to start with pollution control and say I think that there is a general concern because when we left here last year passing the Clean Water Legacy Bill, folks assumed that it would be funded this year, and unfortunately it is not funded in the governor's budget. And I see that you do have the spreadsheet done by Mr. Reinholz, who's our fiscal analyst. He worked with PCA to get the numbers, and you'll see the shortfall of $21 billion in 08 and the same in 09, and looking ahead, it's even greater. The way the governor has us on track now for cleaning up our waters, it will take us 200 years, and I call this the 200-year plan to take care of our waters. So I think the numbers speak for themselves. So I will go on and tell you where the other place I see on our committee that I see consensus in doing what we need to do or can do in DNR to promote cellulosic ethanol from prairie plants. We've all been taken by Dr. Tillman's work. I've heard him several times. And if you guys don't know about that, we'd be glad to share. Right? Okay. Let me tell you a bit about the DNR budget. It is roughly the same as it was 2 years ago. However, DNR will lose 84 people with the budget changes. There are increases in three of the divisions in DNR, small increases in lands, minerals, waters, and forestry. But when you get to the place where folks recreate with parks and recreation, that the budget is virtually flat. A real concern here because state park attendance is flat. And when you're not providing what folks expect at parks, they're not going to be coming. So we're in the midst of a self-fulfilling prophecy, I'm afraid. And on top of that, there's not only be a reduction in employees, but an increase in fees. So just note that the governor has proposed increasing camping fees. There's a substantial decrease in the funding of trails and waterways, and operations dollars are just not keeping pace. So you're not going to see good operations and maintenance in parks and trails. Ecological services funding is decreasing, and that is in the face of a real concern with invasive species. Representative Osment will probably talk to you about the big fish, but the land invasive species and the ones in the waters both are increasing rapidly. I think there's a concern across the board. It's certainly a nonpartisan issue. Ecological services is going to depend, of course, on another fee increase to deal with invasives, but I would say it only has a marginal impact in dealing with invasive species. So the only other thing I would note for you all, well, I will note two things. One is that in waters, that the presentation included the words, let me see if I can get them for you. DNR notes that Minnesota has a major challenge in increasing water use demands, and that's the groundwater that we use for drinking water. We don't have a plan for protecting our drinking water sources, either the surface sources or the groundwater. And we don't know whether what we're doing right now is sustainable or not. I think that's a major coming issue. The final thing I will tell you, Representative Hansen is chairing the committee that deals with the Bowser budget. Bowser was critiqued by the legislative auditor, and so he is spending some time with them and with that budget. And so I'm sorry he's not here to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
I hope I was quick.
Okay. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, as you know, the past budgets have been pretty tough, and so we've had some, all the departments that we were dealing with in our committee have really felt those pressures over the past few years. I think out of the DNR budget and the MPCA budget, they were able to make up some of that ground of loss from general fund through the increase of fees in past years, so it makes it extremely difficult for us to be looking at them for any additional revenues now. And I think that with regard to the Bowser situation, they especially got hit because of the general fund reductions in past years, and so it was to me understandable that they may not have been able to live up to many of their obligations, and we're going to be looking at that overall and seeing exactly what maybe we can do to address the issues. But we need to keep in mind that as the revenues decreased for Bowser, there was also increased responsibilities. And so it was kind of a two-edged sword for them, hit them both directions. Right now, we're looking at, I talked to the Republican committee members and see kind of where they were coming from or feeling we're going towards with regard to the budget issues. And by and large, they're feeling quite comfortable with the governor's proposals. And I think that we're going to see as to where the issues are brought up and see how creative we can be in trying to help resolve them.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? All right. Hearing none, I think this has been a very productive evening. I really don't know why Representative Solberg passed me the gavel, but it was meeting is adjourned. It was fun.